This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
Well, the nights are getting longer as we come into October, which means that you don't have to stay up quite so late, and also, of course, that you can get up not too early in the morning to see some of the rather lovely morning objects that we have, as we shall see later on. However, let's just start with the stars and constellations one can see sort of mid-evening in October. Fairly high, towards the south, is the constellation of Pegasus, the winged horse, actually upside down, with his mane and head down to the lower right. Up to the left of the square of Pegasus, the top left-hand star being Alpha Andromedae, which of course is in the constellation of Andromeda, in there you can actually find a rather lovely object, M31, the Andromeda galaxy. And if you go into the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank Observatory website, just put that into Google, you'll find some instructions of how to find it either from the square of Pegasus or coming down from the constellation of Cassiopeia, which is just above. Between Cassiopeia and Perseus is a rather lovely region of rich sky which contains the double cluster. Very nice in binoculars, even better in a small telescope where you can see both of these clusters in the same field of view. Perseus has another nice, interesting object. It's a star called Algol, which is actually an eclipsing binary. And every few days, the brightness drops by a magnitude or so. And if you happen to know, and many of the magazines give you the times at which that's going to happen, it's quite fun to compare its brightness with its surrounding stars. Below Pegasus is a little circlet, the head of one of the fishes in Pisces. Just below that, as we shall see, is in fact the planet Uranus. Down to the left of Pisces is Cetus the whale, and to the right, Aquarius. Not an awful lot in that part of the sky. Up to the right of Pegasus is that lovely region of the sky containing the constellations of Cygnus the swan, Lyra the lyre, and Aquila the eagle. Their bright stars, Deneb, Vega, and Altair, making up what I think Sir Patrick Moore called the summer triangle. Very, very rich region. And just down to the lower left of Cygnus the swan, tiny little constellation, Delphinus the dolphin. Very nice one, just a spot. Okay, well, what about the planets this month? Well, it's actually not a bad month. The only planet you can see in the evening sky is, of course, Jupiter. It's lying in Capricornus. It's easily visible. It really dominates the southeastern part of the sky in the evening. We've had lots of phone calls saying, what is that bright object I see in the sky? It has an angular size of about 45 arc seconds, which means that with a small telescope, you can easily make out the equatorial bands and spot the moons of Jupiter. There's a highlight come out about those later on. At the moment, of course, though, Jupiter is very low in the ecliptic. It's only reaching about 22, 23 degrees above the horizon, and therefore we're seeing it through quite a thick atmosphere, which means that the images we get aren't really quite so clear as they sometimes are. On the 26th of October, Jupiter's just below and to the right of the Moon, 2 days after first quarter. Might be a nice thing to look at. Well, the other planets we see are in the morning sky. Saturn reappears in the pre-dawn sky during October and actually gets better as we move towards the end of the month. Has a magnitude of plus 1.1, which is not as bright as it normally is because the rings are virtually edge on and therefore they're not reflecting any of the sunlight towards us. In fact, it arises about 4 in the morning UT, about 3 hours before the sun. Again, a small telescope will easily show Saturn's largest moon, Titan, and a bigger telescope, you can actually spot several more. Well, Mercury is also in the morning sky. It reaches what is called western elongation, and that's when it's at its greatest angular distance from the sun, before dawn, on October the 6th, so just a few days into the month. It's actually the most favourable dawn apparition this year, because the ecliptic is aligned at a reasonable angle to the horizon. So in fact, Mercury will be about 15 degrees above the horizon, and in fact in company with Venus and Saturn, as we shall see later on. So do have a go at spotting Mercury in the morning sky, and I'll give you a particular day to try later on. Now Mars is becoming more prominent in the morning sky. It rises at about 10:30 UT in the middle of the month. It's actually in Gemini at the beginning of October, but on the 12th it actually moves into Cancer. As we get nearer to it, as we sort of come round on the inside track, its magnitude is increasing slowly, 0.7 to plus 0.8 in magnitude, whilst the angular size also increases from about 6.8 arc seconds. It's due south, which means it'll be roughly highest in the sky at about 6:30 UT in mid-month, so you can see it if you're willing to get up reasonably early in the morning. And by now the size is such that with a small telescope you should begin to see some of the more prominent features such as Syrtis Major. Well, that just leaves Venus. It's now drawing closer to the Sun and it's on the far side, and it can be seen low in the east, rising a couple of hours before sunrise. It's going to be close to a very thin crescent moon on the 16th of October. The angular size, because it's so far away, is only about 10 arc seconds. The phase is getting almost to full. It actually increases from 90 to 95% during the month. But of course, by the end of the month, it'll be increasingly lost in the Sun's glare. Magnitude stays at 3.8 during the month. Minus 3.8, I should say. Well, what about the highlights this month? There are actually quite a few. I mentioned Uranus. It's lying just below the circulars of Pisces, and a good time to search for it is obviously around New Moon, which is about the 18th of October. It was at opposition, which means it would be highest in the sky about midnight on September the 17th. So in fact, it's now highest in the sky a little bit earlier than that, which helps. It has a magnitude of plus 5.7, which actually means that under perfectly good dark skies and transparent skies, you could perhaps see it with your unaided eye. But I suspect you'll probably need a pair of binoculars or a small telescope. Anyway, there's a chart on the night sky page to show you how to find it. Well, I've mentioned that three of the planets are in the morning sky. On October the 10th, they actually make quite a nice little line in the pre-dawn sky. Venus, Saturn and Mercury will be close together. By the 16th, they'll have separated somewhat, but are joined by the waning crescent moon. In fact, if clear, that will make a very nice skyscape. I've mentioned that you can find Andromeda quite easily at the present time, so have a go at that. Oh, on the 7th of October, a gibbous moon passes just below the Pleiades cluster. Now, it's fairly bright, so it will actually probably need binoculars to see the Pleiades, but together they should look really rather nice. Now, I mentioned Jupiter. At the moment, Jupiter's equator, and hence the plane of the satellites that's aligned with it, is actually containing the Earth, which means, of course, that at times one of the satellites will be seen to pass in front of another, sort of forming an eclipse. And there are two nice events this October. On the 10th of October at 9:44 BST, there's an eclipse of Europa by Io. And on the 16th of October, Ganymede will eclipse Europa at 10:10 BST. So quite a lot of these mutual events of the satellites during this month, just because the plane is literally in line with us. Well, we have one of our first autumnal meteor showers in October. Around October the 21st, they're called the Orionids because, in fact, the radiant, that is where they appear to come from, is up to the left of the constellation of Orion. They're best seen in the hours before dawn, when Orion's high in the southern sky. And as you look sort of more or less straight up where the atmosphere is least, you've got more chance of seeing them. You don't get an awful lot, perhaps 20 per hour, but they're fairly constant and they're very fast. They leave sometimes some quite persistent trains, little streaks of ionized gas as the incoming dust particles burn up in the atmosphere. So it's well worth having a look around the 21st. By that time, happily, although we're coming away from New Moon, which is around the 18th, the moon is setting really quite soon after sunset, certainly in the early evening, and the best time to observe the Orionids is after midnight or around midnight, so there should be no problem from the moon. It's a good year, so give it a try. Well, now something for those that live in the southern hemisphere, but I shall mention an interesting object Centaurus A, it's called, which may be of interest to those who actually live in the Northern Hemisphere as well. Okay, well, of course, your nights, in contrast to ours, are getting shorter. But you actually look towards the north, you actually see Cygnus fairly low above the horizon with Lyra in the northwest. Delphinus, the dolphin, is higher up towards the zenith of your sky. Over in the northeastern sky is Pegasus, which for you, of course, is the right way up. Andromeda, sadly, is just about below the northeastern horizon, so not too good. The circuit of Pisces is well visible, so there's a good chance of finding Uranus. And then you've got Aquila the Eagle up to the left as well. So not a bad sky. And then higher up, getting towards the zenith, is the wonderful constellation of Sagittarius, along with Scorpius, is looking towards the heart of our galaxy, the Milky Way. Looking south, which of course is the area of sky that we cannot see, you've got the Milky Way stretching from the south over towards the southwest. Very, very rich part of the Milky Way, with Carina and Crux and Centaurus are basically rising from the south towards the southwest. I've talked about those quite a lot earlier in the year. East of south, you can see with binoculars on a dark night, maybe just with your eyes, the large Magellanic Cloud. And just to the lower right is a rather lovely region of the LMC called the Tarantula Nebula. 30 Doradus is another name, the name given, in fact, to a rather nice star cluster within it. It's a very lovely object, of course. And looking up towards the zenith from the large Magellanic Cloud, you, of course, come to the small Magellanic Cloud with nearby fantastic globular cluster 47 Tucani. But the object I'd just like to mention is fairly low in the southwest, but could be found. It's called Centaurus A. Now, there are two bright stars in Centaurus, obviously Alpha, Alpha Centauri, and then Beta Centauri. They point down towards the Southern Cross. If instead of following from Alpha Centauri to Beta Centauri towards Crux, the Southern Cross, you do a sort of a 45 degree right turn, you come down to another bright star, beyond which you may well see a little fuzzy object, which is Omega Centauri, I talked about last month. Beyond that, there's another seventh magnitude object, so binoculars are needed, called Centaurus A. And Centaurus A is a very, very interesting galaxy. We believe it is the merger of two galaxies, perhaps within the last 1 billion years. That has caused a lot of star formation to go on, and there's a very, very thick dust lane. Now, it's got the name Centaurus A because that was the name given to it when it was discovered to be a very strong radio source, the strongest radio source in that constellation. And it was discovered in Australia, and we believe there's a massive black hole, a supermassive black hole at its center. Material falling into that gives rise to beams of particles, which then in fact produce radiation. And there are two great lobes of radiation on either side of the galaxy. But it looks really very impressive if you've got anything like a sort of a 6 to 10 inch telescope. So have a go, have a look at Centaurus A. Well, good hunting.